Blog Talk Radio.
60 years professional and private stock investing experience. Two-time best-selling investment author. Developer of the world's most profitable stock timing systems, Sidney Tremain is here to help you to take charge of your financial future. On your side, Sidney Tremain.
Hello and welcome again to our Monday segment when we talk about money and investment and hanging out with us again for this second week is none other than one of the world's greatest teachers on investment, Mr. Sidney Tremain. Sidney, are you? I think I have him all muted. Hello, Sidney, are you there?
I'm there now, yes, Daphne. Hello.
All right. Well, I am so honored to have you again come on here and just tell us how to get our ducks in order. This week, we are going to be talking about the 7 tips for investing success. So I know last week you gave us a lot of things to go home and work on, and the first time you were on, so I just appreciate you laying it out the way that you are.
I appreciate being able to talk to you and to the listeners,
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So go ahead. You have the microphone. I will interject when I need to.
Okay,
so just,
Daphne.
Let me just remind the listeners, this is a direct teaching. At the end, you'll get Sydney's email if you want to email with question, but these Monday night segments are direct teachings. So we're going to go right into that, and we ask that you make yourself comfortable and get something to write with. All right, Sydney, go ahead.
All right, Daphne. You know, all too often when I was a broker, I saw clients invest because they had money, and they had money at that time. It was unplanned, so far too often. The stock
mm-hmm.
market doesn't know. It doesn't care whether you've got money or whether you haven't got money. What matters mm-hmm. is whether your stocks are more likely to increase rather than decrease.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's often said that investors cannot time markets.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have absolute proof that markets can be timed and quite accurately.
Mm.
But I also know this. You cannot rely on the news media to help you determine when the time is right either to invest or to get out of investments.
Mm-hmm.
That invites the worst enemy of all for investors, emotion. And investing successfully are absolutely two opposite things. You must have some sort of a system to be able to time investment entry and exit. But we'll talk more about that in the fourth segment of this series, and we'll get into that later. Today,
mm-hmm.
though, as you said in the introduction, I've got 7 tips that will help you with investing success, and we'll talk about those. Most
mm-hmm.
novice investors believe that the key for them to have success is to pick the right stocks.
Mm-hmm.
If that's what you think, I've got a surprise for you.
Mm.
Uh-huh. I'm teasing you.
I know, because you know something? Everybody's always looking for 7 tips, 10 secrets, and everybody wants to get them overnight. So it's good to hear, though, that we are going to get something and to give us the real understanding about how this is supposed to go about. So,
you know, everybody wants to pick the best stock, and when I was in this game in the very beginning 60 years ago, I was the same. I wanted the best stock. Somebody has to get that, but to get it, deliberately without an extreme amount of luck, I think is impossible.
Mm-hmm.
But let's
right.
talk about tip number. Let's talk about tip number one first, and it's that you should be a long-term investor. Now, what does that mean? Does it mean you should buy a stock and keep on holding it until, you know, you're old and feeble or pass it on to relatives? No. What I mean by that is that you should try to buy early in a bull market, which is difficult to do if you're listening to newspapers and radio and stuff like that, because there's nothing but bad news. So what it really means is trying to buy early in the bull market and holding until we get to highs. You need the upward move and to avoid the downward move. And in the fourth segment of these sessions, I'll tell you something about that and how you might achieve it. So our investments, for example, average about 5.5 years. That's what I mean by being a long-term investor.
Mm-hmm. Did you say average 5.5 years, Sydney?
5.5 years.
Okay.
Now, I run into day traders often who, you know, trade in matters of minutes. And to me, that's gambling. That's all that is. It's not investing.
You could go to the casino.
It's speculating. And for me, that would be extremely dangerous. Now, some people make a lot of money at it. I don't know how they do it. I think they have nerves of steel. We talked about stock selection, and this is my tip number two.
Mm-hmm.
But it has nothing to do with the average private investor's success, despite all the effort that some people put into it. Some people look at the picking the right company as being the most important thing. To me, it isn't important at all, and I'll try and explain that in end of this tip. I used to work with analysts with qualifications almost as long as your arm.
Mm-hmm.
Not only do you, as a private investor, get their recommendations late after the institutional players have had them for weeks, the institutional buyers have had them for weeks, but here's the point. Nobody can tell the future. If you think that they can, look at Yahoo's business section of finance at some point and pick any stock you wish that is followed by analysts and look at their opinions. One will say buy, one will say sell, or rarely will say sell. They don't like to say sell. It costs them business.
Mm-hmm.
Or...
Right.
Another one will say hold. But the point is that they argue in public, and they can't all be right. Buy, hold, and sell can't all be right at the same time. So to me, even with the analysts, with all their training, it is, for them, educated guesswork. I don't like guesses. I like to know where I'm going and the most likely result for my money. What you should aim for, in my opinion, is simply to keep pace with the major indices. Now, that sounds wimpish. It sounds as if, you know, there's nothing very clever in that. And to some degree, there isn't. I'm not talking clever here. I'm talking making money and protecting it.
Mm-hmm.
To do that, to keep up with the indices, you need around 10 stocks from different industries.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, depending on which reference you look at, there are usually 10 or 12 industrial groupings. And on Yahoo, again, you can find articles that will list the Standard & Poor's 500 stocks and the industry that they belong to. So the 10 stocks that you should pick should be all from different industries, because we never know which one is going to outperform the other.
Mm-hmm,
and
by
spreading right across the market, you have a very good chance of keeping up with the market. Now,
And these should be evenly spread?
Evenly spread and even amounts of money. That's the other thing.
Okay, right,
So not in numbers of stocks. I don't care.
I'm talking about monetary value.
Yes, monetary value should be equal. Don't play favorites. Because if you only have 10 stocks, I challenge you to pick the one that's going to perform best.
Mm-hmm,
it's probably the one you think will perform worst. Now, including dividends, the long-term return on investment for stocks is around 10%.
Mm-hmm. Are we still on two? Is that, you're still working on
we're
two?
Still
or
on tip number, we're still on tip two. Number two, but I'm coming to why I say try to keep up with the index, which is only averaging 10%. But listen to this. What we're going to do is go from low to high, and we'll talk about that in this series, and then get out for what the market next does, which is go down. The market's 10%. The market's 10% includes where it gives up a great chunk of what it made on the way up.
Mm.
Our trick is going to be to hang on to everything or as much as we can of what we make on the way up. So tip number two is diversify with 10 stocks, different industries, same amount of money, to try to keep up with the market on the way up. And then on the way down, we're going to stand aside. Does that make sense, Daphne?
Yes, yes. But the thing,
okay.
You know, I listen to you here, and I'm thinking, I am sure the traditional investors, they are not having this conversation with the clients when they sit in front of them.
No, they don't.
Because if they do that, they're going to be losing business, and they don't want to lose business.
Well, they would have their clients in a stock for roughly 5.5 years if they follow what I've just said. But you bring up another point, and I can't remember whether I've got it in the tips or not. I think I do, which is, yes, it is. It's tip number six. We'll get to it. It's to use discount program.
All right. Okay.
I'm not butting
in. I'm going to let you do your stuff. Go ahead.
No, please butt in, Daphne. I'm going to suggest you do not use a full-service broker. And let's talk about brokers for a minute. I was one for 15 years, and I was very successful with it. But I did my business a somewhat different way, as I usually do. In that I spent time teaching my clients. I would spend at least an hour every time they visited the office with each client to examine what they wanted to achieve and then tell them how to do it. And that was something that I did that seemed to be different from all my colleagues. What you don't need, if you are doing this correctly, is a full-service broker who gives you what the sales managers told him to talk about that week or gives you his own ideas. I have seen brokers, and I have done it myself, have absolute disasters with their own investments at times. And the last thing you want is something messing up your own system is designed for two things, growth and safety. So we've talked about how you spread your investment across industries and a number of stocks. And what we're really looking at is diversification. Mm-hmm. Now, in the early days, I'll just leave it at the early days, never mind how long ago those were. I used to think that if I was going to invest in a stock, I wanted the very best one. And we've already talked about how that's an impossibility.
Right,
but in
because
the beginning,
people use those terms because they don't know better, that they have been programmed over the years to think
well,
that
listen,
there is something
the
like that.
In the beginning, Daphne, we don't know anything. It's mm-hmm. that simple. And there are ways to get the knowledge. Most people think that books on investing are dull, and I think most of them are.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are very technical. Some of them almost need a degree to understand what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think the average person thinks, well, I've got this money. I've got to go and buy a stock, one stock.
Mm-hmm.
And they will try and hunt around and figure out from friends or neighbors or magazines or whatever what they think is the best one. Now, I used to do that. I used to do that in the beginning. And if somebody talked to me about diversification, which in fact nobody ever did, I would have said to them at that time, I'm looking for the best. Why should I also pick the second best? Well, really, diversification is not about picking the best or the second best or the tenth best. It's about
right.
spreading the risk. And if you spread
right.
the risk, you
spread
have
greater
safety. Spread
the risk over,
safety.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm,
you see,
mm-hmm.
if you don't
and
look
you know,
after
Sydney,
your capital.
If we were being made privy of this conversation, people wouldn't be losing the clothes off their backs. Because they would have cushion because the thing would be spread out and they wouldn't just bank everything in one section and then everything is gone. Yeah.
Yes. We'll talk about some of this in the fourth segment because I've got something lined up for that for you. I pay as much attention to safety as I do to growth.
Uh-huh.
And we have tremendous record for safety and the world's best record for growth. And that may sound as like I'm bragging, and to a small extent, Daphne, I am. I'm very proud of what we can get for people. But that
right.
we'll do talk about in the fourth segment.
Well, it's about time people it's about time, Sydney, somebody honest comes to the forefront, you know? It's about time.
Well, definitely. I think there are a lot of honest people who are brokers, but in every career, there are people who are in the game for their own benefit.
Right.
And that happens too in the brokerage industry. It's not
right,
surprising.
Right.
The brokerage industry is about money,
and
right. their profit is money, and
mm-hmm.
their profit is. Sometimes the client's cost.
Yes.
So you have to keep your guard up. And you asked at one time whether the first thing you should do is go and see a broker. And I said at that time that was very wrong because in the beginning you don't know enough to know whether the broker's any good. Look, as
exactly.
a new client, especially if you don't have a lot of money, and by a lot of money, I mean $1 million or more,
mm-hmm.
You are likely to get a rookie. In fact, I had a call, I'm trying to think, 3 or 4 years ago, from a new broker on Wall Street, a rookie,
mm-hmm. right.
who was asking me how to market himself to $1 million clients because his firm would not accept anybody who had less than $1 million. This was a mm-hmm. rookie.
Wow.
And, you know, rookies, all brokers go through a series of training.
Exactly.
Which that training only lasts about 3 months.
Okay, it's not long. Okay. And they have to be certified too, right?
Yes, that takes
okay.
about 3 months. But... you know, you don't have the experience. You have the knowledge maybe from the books, but you don't have the experience. And this young man was asking me to help him with his marketing. Uh-huh. That was quite a shock to me.
Don't be, because I mean the ones that are there already, it's not about, they're not about to tell him anything. They are where they are, and they're not pulling him up at all. So, you know, I want to let you be aware of the time. You have 39 minutes remaining, and you're still on point number two.
No, that was three we just did. This is four.
Okay. All
four,
right. So what's three? Four. What's three?
Diversification.
Okay. All right. Sorry. All right. So go on
tip
to four,
four
then.
Tip number four is to use stop-loss orders or stop orders. And I'll explain what those are in a minute. And that's to curb emotion. I've mentioned already that emotion is one of the worst enemies you can have. There are two types of order. One is to buy and one is to sell. They're called stop orders, and the one to sell is called a stop-loss order. The one to buy is called a stop-buy order. Let's just talk about the stop-loss, and the other one is the reverse of it. It is a target that is set, a figure, a number, a dollar number that is set, that if a stop falls to that level, it will be sold. It won't necessarily be sold at that level. Let's suppose your stop-loss order is set at $20.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody else trades a stock at $20. Your order then becomes an order to sell at whatever the next price is. And it might be $19.75 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But what this does, you set this, these orders are typically good for 1 week. You set the order, let's say, over the weekend with your discount broker, and then you can forget about it. If the stock falls to $20, it's going to be sold for you. If it isn't, then next week you're setting a different target. And if the stock has been rising, it maybe your next target is $20.25.
Uh-huh.
Eventually, you're going to lock in profit. But you're going to do it without the last minute, is this right, is this wrong, should I do this, can I get another 25 cents out of this? You know, there is so much emotion gets into selling. And it is said that selling is five times more difficult than buying in terms of the person's emotion. So by setting a target in advance, it's a lot easier on the nerves, and you know, it just simplifies it. But now, my own systems have a very, very complicated system for stops, and we'll talk about those again in the fourth segment, about when to use them and when not to use them. There are times that my system does not use them, and those typically are somewhere close to the bottom of the market, the low prices in the market. There's a lot of volatility, especially there. There's volatility there and at tops. The two ends of the market typically have more volatility than the middle piece. If you have too tight a stop-loss order, and in the early days I was told, well, you should trail one behind the prices of the stock by 10%. So if the stock was at $10, you'd have a stop-loss at $9. And if the stock then went up to $12, some other figure, your stop-loss would move up behind it by 10%. I can tell you now, I've done thousands of tests on that, and that is too tight. You miss out some of the better opportunities if you do that. You get cut short. So that was tip number four, using stop-loss orders. I surprised a lot of people in the industry when I used to use them to buy stocks. Many people don't really follow that. why would you have a stock at $10 with a target to buy it at $11? Why not buy it at 10? Well, the reason is this, Daphne. It's been thinking, it's $10 now, and if it goes up, I'm willing to pay 11. But if it goes down, what then? Well, I would follow the stock down and buy when it turned around. And I might buy that same stock that's now $10. I might buy it for 5.
Wow.
Which is why I start with the target at 11, because it drops and I bring the target down.
Okay. All
it's
right.
It's a simple maneuver.
Yes, but as again, going right back to where we don't know that, so we don't do it.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You need, and this is tip number 5, you need absolute discipline. You know, like a computer or a robot.
Uh-huh.
Having stop losses, for example, gives you that discipline because you're not making those last-minute decisions. Seat of the pants in testing invites failure because emotions will destroy discipline. Say that again. Seat of the pants investing invites failure because emotions, and you can't avoid those emotions with seat of the pants investing, will destroy discipline. It's why the average investor makes 4 to 6% when the market makes 10.
Four to six is all? Wow.
You must have a plan and you must stick to it.
Mm-hmm.
You must use discipline to stick to a plan.
So, Sydney, is it okay to get somebody that is going to manage this plan for you? Are you, the investor, have to physically manage it yourself?
No, it's your money. You're the person who should be investing it and directing it. But for instance, you know, we have a service. You know that, and we give advice, or the system gives advice. I personally never give advice. I will help people, but I will not tell them what to invest in. I'm not allowed to these days. I don't have the right license anymore.
And there are systems in place that allows people to do all that you are saying, because, you know, people are listening and they're thinking it's complicated.
Daphne,
I don't know anything about financing.
Daphne, if I had a child who could read and understand words, a child could run the system that I offer people.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, in fact, I've done that with 2 children, a 9-year-old and 11-year-old that we followed for more than a year.
Oh, yeah, a lot of these kids are smart. You look and see what a lot of these kids are inventing and everything. These kids are smart.
Daphne, listen to these kids. They were 2 Panamanian children who did not speak English, had never heard of a stock, wouldn't own one if they fell over one, and they kept up with the index. In fact, in some cases, some months, they were ahead of the index.
Wow. And how old were they?
One was 9 and one was 11, and they did not speak Spanish.
Lord.
They lived
speak
in
English.
English, yeah, they didn't speak English. They lived in a concrete block house that was unpainted. They had no windows. They had boards over where the window holes were. Eventually, they got windows. But at that time, there were no windows. There was a dirt floor.
Wow.
That's how they lived.
Exactly.
Those two children, some months were ahead of, on average, ahead of the index. Some, they were slightly behind. They just kept up with the index. So they did it with 12 stocks from different industries. All they knew to do was take a colored crayon and underline which stock on a whole list of, well, all of the Standard & Poor 500, one from each industry, and color it with their particular color so I knew who'd picked what. That's all they did.
Wow.
Now, I'm telling you that anybody...
Kids take instruction and they run with it.
Exactly.
adults
have Daphne, what this was designed to prove was that if you picked 10 or 12 stocks and picked them the right way and put an equal amount of money, and they put monopoly money, $2,000 in each one, that you can win. You can keep up with the index. What you have to have is an index that's going up, obviously, a market that's going up, a rising market, and that is the trick. They actually started in January of 2009 while the Great Recession was still on, more than 2 months before it ended.
Wow.
And in those first few months, they were ahead of the index. So
was was that a research test you had the kids in, or were you testing one of the systems with them?
No, not at all.
Okay.
This was a straight investment for each of these 12 stocks, or a mythical investment.
Okay.
No,
okay.
The reason I did that, and I ran that month by month, blow by blow, on a website, I wanted to prove that exactly what you just asked, that anybody can do this successfully. Anybody. It is not difficult at all. In fact, I have a book that talks about this. It talks about how people think that this is an extremely complicated sort of business to be in, and it isn't. A lot of it is fluff. I think that time is running on, so I'll get on to the next tip, which is tip number 6.
You have 27 minutes, so.
Okay. Well, it'll give us time to talk after the tips are through, and we can wrap it up that way. But I said use a discount broker. Now, why? Well, the first reason is that if you use a full-service broker, two things happen. They want to give you full service, which means giving you tips, which I've talked about earlier. You really do not want that. And you pay through the nose for this. So why pay, I don't know what the fees are these days. I just remember them from when I was a broker. But why do that when you can pay less than $7? I think there's one that's at $12. And there are some that are slightly under $5 per trade, per investment action for buying and selling, two actions. Why pay more than you have to? Because you do not need the advice. I've told you how to pick the stocks, and you can pick them, as far as I'm concerned, this is how important I think that is. You could pick them blindfold with a pin. I don't care how you pick them, as long as you do it from different industries with the same amount of money in each one. It really doesn't matter. And that
because
was what
you do
these
that,
kids...
You don't have to end up with anxiety and everything, because a lot of times when people use the old formulas, they from the minute they walk out, they do the investment, they are in anxiety mode.
You're not going to remove anxiety from a new investor. They're bound to be anxious, and that's normal. But what I'm saying, and the reason I use these two children in this very public exhibition, was to prove that anybody can do this. You don't need a full-service broker to give you his latest ideas. Look, every week, and when I was a broker, now I was fortunate. I had a system, and I was older than a lot of the people, and so I had a number of advantages. I had my own team and my own computer system and all of that stuff, and so I was left to set my own rules in a sense. So that was I earned the firm a lot of money, and they left me alone. But I did sit in on some of the weekly sales meetings. And there what happened was that the sales manager would make a suggestion for a stock that might be promoted that week. And people would nod their heads and go off and go and promote the thing. And as often as not, I saw disaster in the result of that. And the other thing that would happen is that there would be around the room quick discussion. What is your favorite stock for this week? Who cares? What matters is what are you going to do to manage what you have and for a profit? I think that management of the stocks you have is way more important than what you pick. It's that simple. So a discount broker will not charge you that type of money and will not try and tell you their best ideas.
That's
that both things are useful.
So they're not making money off of that.
Well, they make money off any action.
Not a lucrative amount.
If you buy or if you sell, they'll make, you know, $5 or $7 or $10. And if you're doing that once every 5.5 years, they're not making very much money from you.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you get to a discount broker that doesn't charge a fee for an inactive account. Some do. So you have to make sure that you get one that doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And tip number seven.
Something just came to mind here. Where people can get access to the information before they talk to the broker, so that they can know when they're leading them down the wrong way?
Well, there are lots of places to get information, Daphne. I'm a specialist. I have my own systems, and we make sure that everybody is very well informed all the way through. I mean, basically holding their hand all the way through, and I think that's important. But we'll talk about that in the fourth segment, too. Other than that, it is difficult because people don't really know where to go. There are hundreds or thousands of books on investing. I have two of them. But, you know, which is the best one for the particular person is something that I can't answer for you. It depends partly on the person themselves and their psychology. You see, I'm looking right now for 20 people, and I think you know that. But I don't just accept anybody, not at all. There's a 1 hour or so interview before I decide to accept somebody. And the reason for that interview is to find out as much as I can about the person's psychology and their desires and what they want to have and where they are now and can I help them move from one to the other. If I can't do that, then I won't accept them as a client. And some people should not invest. For example, if you're going to spend nights in the dark looking at the ceiling that you can't see anyway because you're worried about your investments, maybe you shouldn't invest. It's that simple. Some people cannot take the slightest loss. It's a great insult to them. We don't lose that many, but we lose some. We lose 14 out of 100. That's the latest figure as of this week. 14.7%. 0.07%, I'm sorry. Whereas seat of the pants investors, there's no way to know what's going to happen to that person. Sometimes they get lucky, but most of the time they don't. I don't know if that helps at all, Daphne.
How do you categorize? Because that's a word that I struggle with all the time because I really don't know what that means, you know?
Well, some people treat the stock market as if it's a casino and they get thrills and spills and all of that stuff. And if they make a bunch of money on one throw of the dice or whatever it is they do, then I call that luck. It's not. There's no plan behind it. There's no plan behind
it. It's just universal laws. I get it.
Yeah,
We have 19 minutes remaining.
Okay.
And I just want you to list each of them. Again, you don't need to do the extension. You just list each of them.
As a summary,
to make sure.
I will.
So they have
will.
Them in order. Okay.
Okay. Now I lost what I was about to say.
So you're talking about seven and seat of the pants investors.
Yeah. I think we'll move on to tip number seven. There is a way to leverage the money that you have. Let me suggest this. Let's suppose you've got, for example, let's suppose you have $100,000. Let's suppose you have $80,000. Or better still, $75,000. And you decide you want to invest in 10 stocks, but you want to invest $10,000 in each. Well, oops, there's a slight problem there. You only have 75 and you need 100. But here's what you can do if you are buying early in a bear market, in a bull market, in a rising market. But that is essential. It must be if you're buying early. Because if you buy early, typically there is quite a quick rise. Quite quickly, you're in a profit position.
Mm-hmm.
You can borrow money from the brokerage firm, and discount brokers do the same thing. Now, usually at better rates than you can get at the bank. But here are the terms. You must have value in your account equal to or greater than the amount of money that you borrow.
So
if
that
borrow,
means I can borrow the $75,000 and leave.
No,
so I can
you
borrow,
have seven. No,
I
you
have
$75,000
and I need 100.
You need 25 more to bring you to 100.
Okay. All right.
You could borrow, you would be allowed to borrow 75. Now, 75 includes cash and the value of any stocks you have in the account.
Okay.
Now, if you borrowed the full amount, the slightest twitch down would mean you get a phone call saying, Daphne, this is a margin call. We need more money now. And that could be a problem.
And that's in the account that they are holding against what they loan you.
That's right. But they are not going to be on the losing end. If you borrow money and invest, it's you that is the loser if the stocks go down, not the brokerage.
I want you to, because I didn't get it. Because I wrote the 80,000 before you said 75. But so I am buying
you want to invest 10,000 in each.
They are $10,000 each.
Yeah.
So
I only have
7.5 is what I have.
So you're going to be short $25,000.
$25,000, yes.
Yeah. So here's what you do. You're not going to buy all of these stocks on the same day. It doesn't work out that way.
Oh.
So you buy the first seven over a month or two or whatever it is.
Bye.
And they have risen in value.
That
means you could probably borrow more than 75,000.
That 75,000 is still in the account being held.
It's in stocks now that might now be worth 80,000.
Okay.
So then I can
get my 25,000. Okay.
Yeah, but you don't do it all at once.
Right.
I'm teaching you the safe way.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I got you now.
Let me go through this. This is complicated, so let me go through it. I'm teaching you the safe way.
Mm-hmm.
You've got your seven stocks. Now you want the eighth one because it's the time is right for that eighth one. You have $5,000 in cash left. You borrow $5,000. And that makes you 10, so you buy the 8th stock. When the 9th and 10th come, you borrow another $10,000 for each one. You do not increase above the 10,000 because otherwise you would be favoring the later stocks that came because you've invested in the others, 10,000. Keep it at 10,000. I don't care how much the account has risen in the meanwhile. That way, and then what I want you to do, as soon as you can, and it depends on whether you have other income and whether you're still saving and all the whole host of things, but as soon as you can, you pay that debt off. That's the first thing you do, so that it's your money completely in the account. You must never, ever go above 25%. 25, if the figure I gave you was 25 out of 100,000. So that's 25%. Don't ever go above that. Don't go anywhere close to 50% or 100%.
Okay.
If you have $50,000 in the account, for goodness sake, don't borrow another 50. You can't do it.
Okay.
You'll be in trouble and risk losing money. So, that, in other words, if you need to borrow money, it is possible, but be very, very cautious about it. Very cautious. Don't trust that you can borrow a bigger amount than you should. Does that make sense?
Yes, a lot of sense. Lot of sense. You have approximately 13 minutes remaining.
Well, I can go through the list of things that I've gone through, and then
right,
we can talk about whatever you want to zero in on.
Right.
Tip number
one.
I
don't know that you're going to have any time left, but anyway, go ahead.
Oh, I think we will. Tip number one, be a long-term investor. And by that, I mean buy as early as you can in the bull market and sell late. When everybody's getting excited and everybody else is piling in and saying, oh, it's safe to invest, that's the time to get very cautious and tippy-toe out of there with your profits. Tip number two, selection of stocks have very little to do with your success. And we talked about how you could almost do this with a pin. You pick 10 or 12 stocks, one from each industry, different industries, and invest the same amount of money in each one. Don't try to play favorites because I can't do it. I don't know anyone who can. Always pick the best ones. It's, in my view, it's impossible. You can try, but it's impossible. Tip number three, which is really an extension of that, is diversification. Make sure you are diversified. And that, tip number two really will do that for you by spreading across the industries, keeping the same investment in each stock, that is diversification. Tip number four, the use of stop orders to either buy or to sell, because they will curb emotion for you. It will keep you from getting all strung out and far too nervous. If you're watching the monitor and watching prices move and trying to guess when you should buy, you know, can you get this? I've seen two people on a monitor. I didn't know who the people were, and they didn't know who each other was. But two people were sitting there all day, one penny apart. Now, what's the sense in that? The stock was either worth buying or it wasn't. They were one penny apart. One wanted to sell at a certain price, and the other one wanted to pay one penny less. And they sat there all day. It doesn't make any sense. Tip number five, you need absolute discipline as if you were a computer. C2B pants investing is an absolute recipe for failure. Every every time. No ifs, ands, or buts. The person might get lucky and get a big winner. If they do get lucky, that increases the danger because they will give that profit back and more. Mm-hmm. And I've seen it so often. Mm-hmm. Tip number six, use a discount broker. Why pay full service fees when you don't need the full service? And tip number seven, be very cautious about borrowing money. It is possible to do. It's called margin. It's possible to do through your broker, but keep the percentage of the total really small. 25% is a little bit, in my view, on the high side. Don't go above that. Those are the seven tips, Daphne.
All right. And now tell people, for those who will have questions, and tell them where to email you with those questions. And
sure, Daphne.
Because what last week I didn't say that, but I'm going to say it now, is that whatever questions you get during the week prior to the next class, you could address it in the next class, so people are, other people are.
I would appreciate that. I would appreciate that, Daphne. You know, sitting here and wondering what people are interested in hearing about is me guessing. I'm doing this by my seat of my pants, and
No. That's not really what is happening. You're not doing it by the seat of your pants. You are teaching.
Let me finish,
please. What I am saying is that the listeners who are listening and ask questions, the questions that they're asking you, I do not want you to answer them independently to them. I want you to address it. That's what I'm saying.
Sure.
That is something entirely different. Because when you answer it only back to them, it's just them knowing the answer, but when you address it in the class, it is part of what you are teaching and everybody hear it.
Sure, so
I want people to know so they are not expecting an answer back from you, but they come to the next class to hear their answer.
Yes. No, I understand
that,
Daphne.
What
I was meaning when the seat of the pants, the seven tips for investing success, I had to guess at what your listeners most want to hear.
But they don't know,
wasn't
Sydney.
Sure.
They don't know because they have never
invested because
they are fearful. So the reason we broke it up this way is because these first four or six segments is specifically designed for the novice because people are not going out. So people who miss the live teachings with you will have an opportunity to buy the products because the next segment, you are going to move into another level of investment.
Yes.
So
yes.
You are giving them what the novice needs. So you don't have to apologize for what you are teaching them because this is what they need to have. We are giving them a curriculum. It's like you're giving them a textbook where the steps are laid out for them to follow.
Well, I would appreciate the questions.
Okay, so they need to send it
to
you.
They will be helpful.
Give it. All right, so give your email slowly where they need to send the answer, and I want to remind them, get the questions out to you. However, they need to come back next Monday and listen for what their answers will going to be. And for those who will miss the class, if they do, they can always, when they get the recording, they can always hear what the answer was. This way, everybody benefits.
Okay. The address, Daphne, is Sydney. That is SYDNEY, Sydney, as Sydney, Australia, at Wealthy Investment Weekly, WEALTHY, Investor, INVESTOR, Weekly, WEEKLY.com.
Mm-hmm.
Sydney at WealthyInvestorWeekly.com.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing I want to remind the listeners for is that they are going to have the opportunity to purchase all of the teachings. And not only are they going to be getting the teachings, they are going to be getting a complimentary copy of your book. So they are going to be having something to treasure. And in your book, it will back up a lot of the tips that you are teaching them here. So I just wanted them to know that.
Okay, Daphne, you might want to talk about, too, is the children's breakfast and what's happening with some of the money from the recording.
Okay, let's address that when we're halfway done. Maybe next week we can address it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You have 3 minutes remaining. I don't know if there is any closing thoughts you want to leave the listeners with.
Well, I could say that next week we're going to talk about mutual funds. A lot of people have mutual funds.
Good.
A lot of people have mutual funds. Some people have been very disappointed in recent years. You know, it's just the name of that game. I am not I'm not enthusiastic about funds. I will tell you why next week.
That's why I like you, because you're honest. You're not sugarcoating it.
No, there are a lot of things that go on with the selling of mutual funds that are, in fact, illegal. People forget to tell certain pieces of information that might put off people if they were buying. I will tell you the effect of those. There are three levels of fees that most people never hear about. They hear about the commissions on the front.
Uh-huh.
But they never hear about the three levels of fees because they are conveniently forgotten.
They are
buried at the back of an annual report in small print by law. They have to be there.
Uh-huh.
But these are some things I don't like about mutual funds.
Yeah, but the beauty
I will talk
is that,
about that next
you
week.
Are wonderful, and you are letting us know about it so we can be on the lookout for it, because when you're armed, you can know what to look out for. So that's wonderful.
I won't make any friends in that industry, I can tell you.
Okay. So just repeat your email again so you use up your time.
Sydney, SYDNEY, at WealthyInvestorWeekly.com.
All right. Well, my friend, as always, it's always an honor to have you. I thank you for the value that you bring to my listeners, and I can't wait to hear all the amazing story around investment that the callers will be calling up later, when they begin to put your system in place, or even just for people to call and say how comfortable they are feeling now that they can go out there and make something happen for them and their families. So I'm very excited about that. I honor the work that you're doing.
Thank you, Daphne. I appreciate you. I appreciate your listeners, too.
Okay. Thank you, Sydney. I'll see you next Monday, my friend.
You will. Thank you, Daphne.
Okay. You're very welcome.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. That was Mr. Sydney Tremaine. Man is full of knowledge. So tell everybody all road leads here next week. See you then, guys. Have a blessed week and be warm.